Hello and a very warm welcome to this week's edition of The Front Page. We have a varied show for you today and we'll start by looking at some of the big stories ahead of the jump seasons with Nicky Henderson, Dan Skelton all setting out plans for the campaign ahead. We'll then seamlessly segue into the Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe, Europe's biggest middle distance race, and the latest market and news ahead of that contest at Longchamps. And finally, we'll wrap up a few of the key industry strands in what has been a busy week. I'm delighted to say I'm joined to my left by Lambourne correspondent Liam Head and via video link by France correspondent Scott Burton. We'll start with the story that was on today's front page, and that is Nicky Henderson setting out his stall for some of his big stable stars, and they do not come much bigger than Constitution Hill. Liam, you've got the latest for us. What can you tell me?
Well, it's another comeback mission for Nicky Henderson and Constitution Hill again. As we seen at the start of last season when Constitution Hill got to Kempton on Boxing Day, first time racing in a year, and obviously did his thing and won tremendously in the Ladbrokes Christmas Hurdles. So it's almost a sense of deja vu for Henderson and his team this year because, you know, we've got to see Constitution Hill come back from what we've seen in the spring where he had two devastating falls at Cheltenham and Aintree and then ran a below-par performance at Punchestown on his final start in the spring. So it's very much a sort of back to the drawing board with Henderson's biggest star. It's obviously a household name we've been accustomed to. Certainly I've been accustomed to in the role of Lambourne correspondent. So some people would say he's... He won't get back to his best. Others argue that we've obviously seen it with Nicky Henderson in the past. He's done this before with some of his greatest stars, and they've arguably been his greatest achievement of getting them back to the top level. So very interesting to hear what he has to say. Obviously, I was there with him last week at Seven Barrows, sort of dissecting last season and talking about the upcoming season ahead. So. Very interesting to see how it all pans out.
And I suppose the real head-scratcher with last season was he was such a slick jumper before. That was his biggest quality. He could get so close to his hurdles. He was absolutely electric. And then it just stopped working for whatever reason. And what is the challenge is it that there's just not a clear reason why this is happening. It does strike me as a bit of a head-scratcher for Henderson and his team. What have they been doing to try and ascertain kind of how they can get him back?
Yeah, I think that's the key point you make there is that we don't know why this is happening. You know, we've seen how slick and how quick and precise and powerful he is over these hurdles, and he leaves it to the very last moment before he takes off. And you kind of almost sense that, obviously, when we've seen him in the Unibet hurdle at Cheltenham on Trials Day, you know, he there was nearly an error at the final flight. So. When you fell at Cheltenham, in the back of your mind, there was always a sort of a thought that this could happen. The fact that it happened twice was just unheard of. We never thought that would happen. But I think it's just because he put so much into his jumping. And like the head scratcher you said yourself, like we don't know why he's been making these errors as he has. It's a real sort of puzzle that Henderson's got to put back together. Obviously, the jumping is the name of the game, and they've got to get that spot on at this stage of the season. You know, heading into the autumn, so it's really interesting. Henderson's obviously given him a full MOT as he referenced. He's been to see a version of equine specsavers as he called it. So he's had a full bone scan. Nothing's come up from that. Henderson said he even looked like a younger horse. So. He's exactly where Henderson wants him to be at this stage, but you know, getting him back to winning ways is going to be a real challenge.
And Scott, a nice simple opening question for you: can he get him back? He's obviously got form with the likes of Sprinter Sacra. I suppose if there was any man who can, it will be Nicky Henderson. But what's your take on Constitution Hill's season?
I think the interesting thing is it's a long time since we've actually seen him had to go and win a really, really competitive race, purely because his first two races last season, he obviously blew up a bit in the straight at Kempton after a long time off, but he was superior to the opposition there. The race on trials day was a kind of a public piece of work, if you like. He was almost stones clear of everything else in there. And then because he didn't finish either Cheltenham or Aintree, and then obviously was out of the running before it really mattered at Punchestown, we haven't actually seen him had to go and win a really top level grade one for quite some time now. So to me, I've no doubt that they can get his mind back on the job in terms of the jumping, and I've no doubt he will travel through his races as well as he has done in the past. But it's just a case of whether he's got that extra gear in the last kind of half a mile, which, you know, he, in his pomp, he kind of put horses under pressure from a long way out, and he didn't really have to have a kind of a sprint finish, if you like, but he had that extra gear that he could just go away from horses and just put races to bed really, really quickly. And I suppose the question is, when he comes up against a new Lion or a State Man or whatever at some stage later in the season, whether he's still got that. There's no reason to suppose he couldn't have it back, but it's a long time since we've seen any proof of it.
And as far as stories go, were he to come back and win a champion hurdle, I mean, that would be... He's a horse who does seem to generate so much interest and cut through a little bit.
Oh, completely. I mean, I've been fortunate enough to be at Cheltenham both when he's won and when he's been... last year, obviously, when he came down as well. I mean, the gasps from the steps where I was watching from just in the grandstand as a kind of general punter, if you like, were audible. The only thing I can really relate it to, and this goes back a long time ago, the year of Foot and Mouth, when Cheltenham was cancelled and they had kind of consolation days at Sandown and Punchestown the same day. And I was at Sandown and they showed Istabrak fall at the last in his race at not Punchestown, Leopardstown, I should say, fall at the last. And the gasps there were, again, something to behold. I think when you get a horse like that who is renowned as such a good jumper, and that being so much their strength, then when that happens, it is just a kind of a almost time standstill type of moment. He is box office wherever he goes. He will, I'm sure, feature on the front page of the Racing Post once or twice between now and next March. I really hope he can come back to throw it down to the younger brigade. Don't forget, he's going to be 9 by the time of the champion hurdle. That's not the average age of the championship winners at Cheltenham. But like you say, if anybody can do it, Nicky can.
No, it was a funny old season for Nicky Henderson. A lot of his horses did run very well, but in some of those bigger races, he just didn't really have the rub of the green. I think that's probably fair to say that was the case for John Bonn. What's the plan for him this season, and do you think he'll stick to 2 miles for the whole year?
Yeah, I think just it's easy to forget that Henderson had 2 winners at the festival because of what happened to a lot of his other big names. As obviously, John Bonn, Henderson sort of described it as a bit of a disaster race. It was kind of almost done as soon as the race started because he appeared to get a bit of a whack on the nose by the starting. You know, the starting line, the string, and but he obviously was well beaten in the champion chase by Marine Nationale. The plan for John Bonn, I believe, is to stick to his usual route for now, which means the Schlur at Cheltenham, and then onto the Tingle Creek. There probably will be a discussion in the pipeline if he goes and wins those races comfortably again, with a view to possibly going up in trip. He's obviously proven that he can go further. He won the Melling Chase at Aintree in April over 2.5. So there's every reason he can get that trip again, and who knows further, maybe.
Yeah, am I the only one who'd have loved to have seen him in a King George? Nice flat track.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. I think there would have been a lot of people screaming for him to go over for the King George this time round. He just looks like he's a horse that just gets better with age, gets better with the distance as well. He's a proper, you know, gutsy horse. It would have been great to see him in the King George, but you know, he's such a talented horse, and he's been proven it for so many years now. It's just great to see him doing his thing. Obviously, there's a bit of a talking point about Cheltenham in March. You know, he's not really done it at the festival before, and question marks around that. But then he's backed it up at Aintree last season, and he's just another exciting horse for Henderson to go to war with again.
And while I've got the Lambourne correspondent 2 yards away from me, what can you tell the good people at home about Sergino, Lalamba, some of those younger horses? Obviously, Sergino coming back from an enormous setback.
Yeah, huge. Sergino was obviously on time form. He was given the Chaser of the Year just on the back of one performance when he won at Kempton on the day after Boxing Day, beating Ballyburn, I think it was, by 7.5, 8 lengths. A truly spectacular chase debut. I think nobody expected him to do it in the manner of which he did, especially after the fact that he started the season over hurdles in the fighting fifth. But he was an absolute superstar last year in the two runs that we did see him. Obviously got, very unfortunately, diagnosed with a ligament to it, to his leg, a near hind leg. And he's got the makings to be an absolute superstar. But it's another comeback mission for Henderson because of how significant his setback was. You know, he was in equine hospital at Donington Valley for almost 6 weeks, getting, you know, a heavy dose of antibiotics, you know, everything. He had the perfect care, and for him to come back and to be back in at Seven Barrows is a miracle in itself. If we get him back to a race course, hopefully that's the plan. Henderson was saying he's ahead of schedule with Sergino. Obviously, he said before that it's unlikely we'd see him before Christmas, but you could see a bit of a sort of glitter in Henderson's eyes that the Desert Orchid is a race that if the plan was sort of ahead of time, then that would be the race that he'd definitely consider at that time, depending on how things go. Obviously, there's a long time between now and then, especially with a horse that's still not back in full training yet. They're sort of taking their time with him, but he's exciting nevertheless. Lulamba, also owned by the Donnellys, as is Sergino, could be anything, Henderson said. Whether that's chasing or hurdles, obviously we've seen him over hurdles. He did nothing wrong last year. Was pipped on the line by 100-1 shot Willie Mullins' horse in the Triumph, something that wouldn't be on your bingo card. So obviously won a Grade 1 last year, has been entered into a Grade 1 at Auteuil.
He's off to see Scott in France.
Yeah, he is. So, but they will sort of scull him over a fence to see what the plan is, but novice chasing is under consideration for him as well.
Very exciting times at the Henderson Yard. It is September, so we won't dwell on the jumps too much, but I did visit Dan Skelton for Sunday's Big Read, and I'd love to get your take, Scott, on his championship chances this year, having come so close. He thinks he has a bigger and better squad. He's got the new lion, who's obviously going to be prominent at those spring festivals. Can you see him getting over the line this year, or is Willie Mullins too powerful?
I thought it was a fascinating read, actually. I thought you got a really good tune out of him, really, in terms of the way he kind of approaches these things psychologically. I think he's somebody who, you know, it would be very easy to kind of just be licking your wounds a bit, and the sort of scar tissue of winning 3.3 million in a British jumps campaign, and that not being enough must be something for the few weeks afterwards, after the end of the season. It must have been quite something to process, especially somebody who has kind of made a point of saying how much they want to be champion trainer. He obviously worked for Paul Nicholls before he was champion an awful lot of times, and it's something that's kind of almost comes with the territory, really, that you want to, in a way that when you look at Nicky Henderson, he's been champion, is it 4 times? I can't remember. But you don't get the impression that's the be-all and end-all of his year. He wants big Grade 1 winners at Cheltenham and elsewhere. I think for Dan, it obviously makes a big difference. But he spoke very, very positively, didn't he? He about how, you know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger kind of thing, and how he's looking forward to kind of raising his game in the expectation that Willie will do something equally dramatic as saddling four of the first five home in the Grand National next year. He believes he will need to exceed what he did last season to be champion trainer at the end of 25-26. So you can only wish him well. From a distance, obviously, I'm maybe a bit more naturally drawn to the kind of champagne and caviar days, if you like. And obviously what he does with the new Lion will be fascinating. Will undoubtedly also have an effect on whether he can be champion trainer, because if the new Lion doesn't rack up a couple of grade one wins, then that will make it the task harder. But as I say, his handling of him will be fascinating to see, because he's trained some very, very good horses before. Obviously, Protectorat's a very good horse, but you'd say this is probably the first potential top-notcher he's had through his hands. I don't want to be rude to any of his previous very good horses, but he looks like he has the potential to go right to the very top. And so that obviously is a different circumstance for him to find himself in. And that will be fascinating to see how that goes as well.
No, absolutely. And the new Lion, Constitution Hill, fighting fifth. That doesn't get you excited for the jump season, what does?
Exactly. I mean, it promises, if they both get there, it promises to be a cracker. And as Scott mentioned at the top of this this morning, it would probably be the biggest test Constitution Hill has faced on a racetrack, and to face that quality of opposition first time out after the spring he's had, then everything will be tested.
Absolutely. And in the seamless segue I promised at the top of the programme, everything will be tested of those who line up in the arc at Longchamp. Scott, you have all the latest for us with the market, but first we'll start with ticket sales and some encouraging numbers from British and Irish visitors.
Yeah, absolutely. France Gallo, I spoke to Laurent Dupont, who's their head of marketing and commercial, and in terms of advanced ticket sales as of the end of last week amongst British and Irish visitors, they're up 18% on the same stage last year. They seem to have, Longchamp seems to have made a big impression on people who've not seen it before. Their statistics were that 27% of the people who went last year, of the people who bought tickets last year from Britain and Ireland, it was their first visit, and 92% of them said that they would consider coming back, and that seems to be borne out in the ticket sales. Now, it should be borne in mind that the actual crowd figure on Arc Day last year was historically very, very low. I think it was 22,300, something like that. And that was despite good advance sales. We do need a little bit of luck with the weather because Parisians, traditionally a lot of kind of casual racing fans, shall we say, will stick their head out the window of a morning and say, what's the weather going to do? And the forecast last year was awful. It actually didn't turn out to be too bad on the afternoon, but the forecast was for thunder and lightning and all kinds of things. And so almost nobody was a walk up on the day. We need a bit of help with that. France Gallo obviously haven't sat on their hands with this. They had a very successful event in the centre of Paris in the Place de la Concorde at the beginning of this month called the Chevaux dans la Ville, the horses in the city, which 35,000 people went to. It was a free event. They had a replica parade ring. They had horses, demonstrations, lots and lots of what they like to call pedagogical, educational displays there. They were telling me this didn't actually make it into the piece, but that they handed out on the Saturday afternoon, which was the second afternoon, they had a couple of hours where they handed out free entries to the Art Trials meeting, which was the day afterwards on the Sunday. They handed out 1,300 of these, 1,300, and 350 people who were handed free flyers who'd already given up their Saturday afternoon to go and discover a bit about horse racing at the Place de la Concorde. Then 350 of those people then turned up again for free for Art Trials Day on a Sunday. So they are not leaving everything to the weather gods. They are trying to encourage this kind of more casual audience to come and discover racing on what is the very much the biggest day of the year in France. So we hope, therefore, that will have an effect. That, as I say, there's more people travelling from Britain and Ireland, and we'll have the crowd figure trending in the right direction.
Yeah, more people travelling from Britain and Ireland, but will we have a British or Irish winner, Liam Head? Colours to the mast time.
It's probably one of the most, if not the most, wide open arcs we've had, certainly in the last few years. It just all depends on who gets there. I mean, as Scott mentioned, the authorities in France will be hoping for blue skies and warm temperatures. There's a lot of horses still in that market that will want the complete opposite weather. Calpana, Almacam, both heavily supported in the market at this stage, both trained in Britain, Andrew Balding and Ed Walker respectively. They'd both want sort of softer ground, testing ground, to see them to better effect. So, I mean, those two alone and what they've shown in their careers would be probably the best, I'd say, British hopes. We don't know who's going to get there from Ireland just yet. But it's you know, it's probably, obviously we've seen Blue Stocking win it. It'd be, you know, Judd Mamet would be itching to do it again with Calpana. If she was to show that, if she was to turn up to get her conditions and perform to the level that she did at, in the King George behind Calandigan, then she would have a massive chance. Equally, if the weather turned sour and the ground came, you know, proper sort of testing, Armacam on the back of what he's shown, obviously won a couple of Group 3s. Ed Walker clearly thinks the world of him. So equally, he'd have a great chance as well. But it's just great to have that interest from Britain and Ireland. And even Japan as well. Obviously, Shin Emperor's not going to go. But, you know, there's global interest in the race. And as Scott was saying, it's important that, you know, the authorities in France do what they can to drum up interest in this race, because it is, you know, the biggest race in the country, you know, the middle distance horses. And it's important that they sort of scream from the rooftops and get support behind it.
No, absolutely. And me and Scott, among those hoping it doesn't rain on the day, because I don't have a particularly good umbrella to take. Back to Calpana, Liam, you mentioned her chances. Judmont pretty clear in the fact that it was a trial at Kempton, her defeat in the September Stakes. Don't read into it too much. Does it worry you at all, Scott? Or do you think her peaking at the right time of the season, she'd have a chance?
I wasn't particularly worried by her being beaten. Giovolotto's a good horse. I saw him win the Hong Kong Vase last year at Sha Tin. Very, very good horse on his day. And you have to assume that neither of them were fully wound up. And, you know, obviously with the art coming a lot quicker than Giovolotto's potential targets in the autumn, they were keen not to go too deep to the well with her. I think she's a perfectly plausible winner. She's kind of a kind of a British version of Aventure, isn't she? She's actually not got a head in front yet this season, but Aventure won a couple of fillies only races at the beginning of the year, was beaten a similar sort of distance by Calandigan in the Grand Prix de Saint-Cloud as Calpana was in the King George. That's really, really very good form. If Calandigan, without wishing to reopen the debate about geldings, if Calandigan were to line up, were to have the right to line up in the arc, he'd probably be a pretty short price at this stage on the basis of what he did in the middle of the summer. Is he £3, or is he, you know, sort of three lengths better than anything in the arc? That's the question I have to ask myself, really. Aventure or Calpana probably need to improve on those two runs. They're both effective on ground with some cut in it, so you would like to think maybe in under those circumstances they will come forward a bit, but they'll need to, as I say, because as good a horse as Calandigan is, I can't believe he's three lengths better than everything else in Europe. So they both need to show more than they have up to this point, otherwise you assume that something else in the field will do them for speed at the end. But the what, the identity of that horse that might be Aventure or Calpana. That's the $1 million or the €5 million question, really.
Yeah, and I was going to ask it, but you just told me how much it costs. It sounded as though you were building up to telling us who your fancy is in the arc there. Who would be your early one at this stage? We won't hold you to it.
I will give the usual caveat that the draw makes a massive difference at Longchamp. And if you haven't got hugely involved by now, I wouldn't put you off waiting a few days longer yet till you know where the horses are drawn. I think it'll be quite a big field. I think the maximum is 24. I don't think we'll get to that, but it wouldn't surprise you. It was 17, 18, 19, 20 runners. So the draw will be important. The only horse I've backed for the arc so far this year, and I can't claim any clever credit for this, is Darius, who went to York unbeaten and, for whatever reason, in what was a very strange race, ran no kind of a race at all. He ran a much, much better race, just getting touched off by Croix du Nord in the Prix du Prince d'Orange back here at Longchamp. When I backed him, he was 14-1. Our colleague Maddy Plough tipped him up at 25-1 in the Racing Post weekend last week, which shows you why she does what she does for a living and I do what I do. But I do think he's one that's potentially got a bit more to come. I think he'll definitely appreciate a first try at a mile and a half. And so he's still a backable each way price. You could make a case for lots and lots and lots of them. I do think, obviously, he's trained by Francis Graffard. I do think the other two Graffard fillies in the race, Quisisana and Jazora, have both got chances of running at least a place. I think Francis will win the arc sooner rather than later. I think he's got a strong hand this year. But if you were to put the metaphorical gun to my head, I'd say Darius at the moment. The three Japanese horses all have claims as well, and I think they add immensely to the excitement of the whole thing. The year that Japan wins the arc will be definitely a day to remember. It is a case of when, not if. And for anybody who thinks that once that itch has been scratched, that they'll go back to conquering the rest of the world, I'm absolutely convinced that the year after we get a Japanese winner of the art, we'll get 8 or 10 runners from that country, because people will have had it proved to them that it is possible. So it's not just a case of being the first man on the moon. From their point of view, I think Japanese participation in the arc is only going to get stronger.
No, absolutely right. And as regular viewers and listeners will know, I'm not afraid to look stupid. So I'm going to go for Qualificar at this early stage and stick to it. Liam?
It depends on... I still wouldn't be against backing Calpana. I was at Ascot the day that she finished second to Calandigan. And I thought she ran a cracking race. It's been the plan for a long time now, this race. And Andrew Balling's having a tremendous season. So I'd still sort of take her. Certainly, I think, because her price has definitely increased on the back of her defeat to Giovellotto in the September Stakes. I'd still take a good sort of... a good chance on her, especially if the rain comes.
No, I'd absolutely agree. We're doing a bit of a dance around the racing world, and our next stop is Hong Kong, and the chief executive of the Hong Kong Jockey Club had some comments last week about the regulatory environment in Britain and the prospect of a tax rise on remote betting duty. Scott, you spoke with him. What can you tell us?
Yeah, Winfried Engelbrecht is the chief executive of the Hong Kong Jockey Club. That also therefore means he's the boss of Whirlpool, which is has become a very significant driver of not only betting on the major races around the world, but also contributing much needed funds to the courses that host those races. So it's become a very important financial aspect of racing in Britain and Ireland. And on top of that, he's also the president, or the chairman, I should say, of the International Federation of Horse Racing Authorities. So he is a big deal in the world of horse racing. And he was speaking, I guess, as a kind of a concerned friend, if you like, of British racing. Whirlpool already have something like 27 days where they cover out of just low 30s, I think, probably. 27 of their World Bowl fixtures feature racing for Britain. So it's a big seller for Hong Kong and world gamblers, if you like. And his point was very much that taxation and other forms of regulation, he referred to affordability checks as well, the kind of the double whammy of those two, is not only going to damage the betting sector, it will, because of the virtuous circle, damage racing and therefore breeding as well. And he was very concerned. He said that they could cause significant damage to all three of those sectors. And he urged people to consider the kind of economic impact of that filtering right across the world, really. He also, as I say, Whirlpool has become an important part of the funding structures of racing in not just Britain and Ireland, but Germany and Australia, South Africa. They take races from all over. And he felt that there was a significant danger that if there was extra taxation, therefore potentially less promotion of racing, less offers from bookmakers because their margins were tighter, that would lead to a drain to the black market. And the black market in itself, obviously unregulated, there's no way of looking after anybody with gambling issues there, but it also would then reduce the liquidity of the Whirlpool and make that a less attractive product. So lots and lots of things that are concerning Mr. Engelbrecht Bresjes, who is, a concerned friend, a major, major figure in world racing. I mean, just to give you an idea, Hong Kong racing turns over across 88 meetings, almost exactly what British racing turns over in terms of betting across 365 days of the year. So it's a hugely important territory. And as I say, it behoves us to listen when our concerned friends from abroad speak up like that.
No, absolutely right. And it is an important territory. And it's a little bit of a sidestep, but Liam, Holly Doyle is going out there on a short-term license. What can you tell us about her move? And do you think it's the right one for her, given how her season's gone so far?
Yeah, she's had a very good season, but I think she'd be the first to admit it's been a bit stop-start. You know, she's obviously not had that sort of top-level horse to sort of partner on a regular basis, as we've seen in the past. You know, that where she's had Group One winners, and she's obviously lost the retained ridership, the rider partnership to
Imad Al Sagar.
Yes, it's an opportunity to sort of go out of your comfort zone a little bit. We've seen obviously with David Probert and Richard Kingscote, they've both sort of gone out there in recent weeks. It's an opportunity to maybe just sort of put your name out there a bit more, and you know, almost sort of sell yourself to show what you can do on an international scale. So we know she's a top class jockey. She's done it for many years over here. I know it's only a short term thing that she's doing it up until Christmas, I think, or something like that. So it's interesting that she's going over there, and I suppose it's probably the right time of year to do it, because you know, once Champions Day finishes, that you know, the core flat season's over, and a lot of the attention turns to the all weather. So it's a good opportunity for her to sort of make new connections and win a lot more money as well.
Well, yeah, there is that, and just as it's come to mind, Scott, really, bouncing back to the racing tax, you also handled a story involving the BHA clarifying its position in relation to the anti-gambling lobby.
Yeah, there's been a lot written, both in the racing press but also in the more general press in the last few weeks, about how certain think tanks around Westminster, the Social Market Foundation, also I think the Institute for Public Policy Research, lots of acronyms flying around, and also the all-party group on gambling reform, which tends to be a magnet for a lot of the people in Parliament, the members of Parliament, who are in favour of placing much higher rates of tax on the gambling companies generally. Been lots and lots of noise around that, and the BHA published a blog I think Greg Swift, the director of policy and communications, was the main driver behind it. Just to clarify that, although they had engaged in one round table in the spring with the Social Market Foundation to kind of put racing's case, and also that more recently Ian Duncan Smith, former leader of the Conservative Party, who's the chair of the all-party parliamentary group, had spoken about a carve-out for racing from their proposals to massively hike gaming tax, and to that they would prefer to concentrate on online casinos and slots and what have you. The BHA felt it necessary to say that although that they had spoken to these people, that they were not working more closely with them, that to say so was just inaccurate, was the word that was used in the blog, and that they remained very much committed to the symbiotic relationship between racing and the betting companies, and that their sole focus is just to put the case of what a significant rise in the rate of duty charged on racing gambling would cause to the very fabric, if you like, of horse racing. The estimate is £330 million pounds lost in revenue over 5 years, and the effect that would have on the size of the industry and therefore in employment. And that is their sole focus. It seems that they obviously, there have been various stories and various people had spoken about the fact that their position might be being influenced by people like the Social Market Foundation and the IPPR and others, and they felt the need to spell out that that was not their focus, that they did not share the aims of the anti-gambling lobby, and that they were just batting for Racing PLC and nobody else.
There was an interesting intervention from the BHA, and that is a conversation around the racing tax that will rumble on, no doubt, well into the autumn, as we'll talk of the jumps. And for the next couple of weeks, our focus will be on the ARC. So lots to get stuck into. But I'm afraid to say we're out of time for today. All that's left for me to do is say a big thank you to Liam in the studio and to Scott via video link for their thoughts. You can join in again next Monday. And in the meantime, have a fantastic week. Thank you very much. Goodbye.